Christian Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Choosing Us, Marriage and Mutual Flourishing in a World of Difference by Gail Song Bantam and Brian Bantam. Narrated by Gail Song Bantam and Brian Bantam. To our regroup squad, Beth and Justin, Carrie and Jeff, Michelle and Jeremy, Liz and Kevin, Kenneth and Kathleen, Marche and Liz, for the gift of letting us journey with you. Prologue, Our Why. In some ways, our marriage and relationship has had a certain storybook feel. Two young college students at schools 300 miles apart are introduced by Jeanette, a mutual friend. A first letter, a first call that lasts 2.5 hours. She calls him back and they talk for another 2.5 hours. More letters, more long-distance calls between 11 p.m. and 5 a.m. when it's 10 cents a minute. They fall in love. Then they meet in person. They share a first awkward car ride, neither of them looking at the other because voices were all they knew. A year later, he proposes. Another year later, they're married. It's practically a movie. But a lot can happen in 27 years. A mutual friend of ours set me up with Brian because she had heard that my mom had just died and knew that his dad had recently died as well. Unexpectedly, a serious long-distance relationship emerged. But when I told my dad I wanted to marry Brian, I was confronted with a heartbreaking choice. Either obey him and not marry Brian because he was a black man, or disobey my dad and potentially lose years of relationship with him. He asked me to leave the house when I chose Brian. As a result, I had to navigate life in close quarters with Brian's family for every school break thereafter. We decided to get married while we were still in college, grieving the fact that my dad wouldn't be at our wedding. Upon graduating, we quickly had to figure out how to pursue each of our calls to ministry. A year later, we were figuring out life with a newborn while Brian headed back to school for seminary. 2 years later, we had our second child and grieved the loss of Brian's mom to cancer. As if those losses weren't enough, during those years, we also endured 3 miscarriages. But in fits and starts, we made our way. Brian graduated from seminary as I scrappily worked part-time, then full-time, as a worship minister. We were unexpectedly pregnant with our third child, trying desperately to figure out how to raise 3 young kids while completing school and pursuing our vocations. Eventually, and years later, I would heed the call to seminary while Brian pursued his doctorate. Both of us still working on the side, the baby tagged along with us to classes, lectures, and music practices like a boss. A few years later, we moved to Seattle, where Brian landed his first job in the field he had worked so hard for, while my gifts would also be fully received and realized in this new season. My dad and I were finally able to reconcile 21 years later as I heard him earnestly say to me, "Brian is a good man." While pointing to a Korean black mixed pop artist on the television, a woman named Insuni, he also said, "She's my favorite artist. If you'd had a daughter, I bet she would have looked like her." Tears! That's my Korean father's way of saying, "I'm sorry." He died 1 year later in 2017 after battling cancer.
This journey was anything but a straight line for us. We both had a sense of call. We both wanted kids. But what that looked like, when to have kids, who would work, who would stay home, how to balance it all, and how to build a life together was a work in progress. Without a plan, our home life fell into the common tropes. Gail at home with the kids, me at school. I got into Duke for a master's program. It seemed easier to me to keep picking up side jobs to make ends meet, but this also meant more hours of Gail at home with little ones. Sometimes it meant tense conversations because Gail's dream was drifting further away while I was on a path toward mine. And sometimes it was hard for me to hear, if I heard at all, because I felt like I was working all the time. I was reading just enough or maybe just a few pages, and I felt like I wasn't measuring up. The journey involved watching as Gail got passed over at our church because she's a woman. It was years and years of taking turns while other people seemed to be on a fast track or enjoying their 20s, while we plodded along, just trying to get through. It included watching as my mother endured and ultimately died from lung cancer. As we raised our kids, questions of race and ethnicity and belonging continued to press. How do we instill in them a sense of being Korean, of being Black, of navigating racial ambiguity and not quite fitting in? And in the midst of it all, it was discovering ways to love and be present for each other, trying to create a new culture in our life together. Along the way, we've come to realize that everything goes in the pot, so to speak. Being committed to each other's flourishing in a world of racism and sexism means we need each other to become our whole selves. Now we've begun to reflect on our journey more intentionally, as well as the journey we've shared with other couples trying to find their way in a world of difference. This book has been tugging at us for a few years. Having been married for 25 years, working as a pastor, Gail, and a professor, Brian, we've walked with many couples who are asking questions about marriage, balancing careers, and navigating race in a world where the violence of white supremacy only increases.
When we got married at 21 in a little church in Maryland, there was nothing elaborate. A church that neither of us were members of, a small reception at Brian's mom's house with his family, a few of Brian's church folk, some random neighbors, and a handful of Gail's friends. We had no idea what we were in for or where we were going. We had talked about going into ministry together, about maybe planting a church, but we were certain that whatever we did, we would be in it together. Those senses of call took us on some winding paths. For me, it started as a part-time music director, then volunteer choir director, then worship leader, then seminarian, to associate pastor, to executive pastor, to lead pastor. The path for Brian was just as circuitous. High school history teacher, educational specialist, seminarian, full-time TA, and any other part-time job I could muster. Doctoral student, then professor. It's easy to imagine that where we are now was the plan all along. But in actuality, it's all been about listening and making mistakes, then trying to listen some more. There was never a plan, only an intention to do whatever we could together, to make room for the other, and to avoid some of the pain we experienced in our own homes growing up. While we did not end up planting a church together or working together in ministry, our work and vocations dovetail. We still work out of a deep sense of call to the church and to serve as witnesses to God's presence and work in the world. But we have also found our own unique ways of living into those calls, and it was only together that we actually found how those calls rang most truly in each of us. In the midst of creating a home and family together, we were also navigating realities of gender and race. As a Korean-American woman and a Black mixed man, we were both learning ourselves and the way legacies of race and patriarchy had shaped our world. We do our work in a world where our bodies matter, where we are created to enjoy and be enjoyed. And yet the fallenness and pain of this world afflict us in real, concrete ways. What does it mean to be a couple, to be for one another in this kind of world? This has been our question and our journey. It's what we teach, preach, and try to live every day. Along the way, we have been surprised to see how some of our mistakes in forging through the bush have resonated with people we've walked with and taught. What we offer isn't necessarily the wisdom of experts, but simply the journey of two people who have been wandering these woods called marriage for a good bit of time. Little did we know that an idea for a book would mean writing it in the midst of a pandemic, confined to work and live in the same space for a year. We could not have imagined the sudden shift from being on the verge of living as empty nesters to living in a full house of 5 people again. And of course, this was the time to get a puppy. In many ways, it has been a gift to be together. But being confined to life with one another, trying to live and work in the same space with the same people all day, every day, as many of us have had to learn, can also accentuate fissures, pull up long-buried tensions, and remind us of difficult questions we sometimes avoid about ourselves and the people we live with.
Early on in the writing process, we took a walk to discuss the project and ideas for chapters. It began excitedly. We are actually doing this, writing a book together. But soon, uneven silences crept in. Frustrated responses bubbled up, and clarifying questions, laced with a residue of past arguments, finally spilled over until I blurted out, "I don't work for you. I'm not on your staff." The rest of the walk home was filled with awkward silence. Worn down, tired because of our new puppy, and our working rhythms undone, little silences became little snips that would take a few days to smooth out. In truth, we haven't fought more than we did while writing this book. The frustrations were never about one individual thing. They were about trying to navigate expectations, opportunities, and the oftentimes unspoken dance of trying to support the other person while also pursuing what each of us is called to do. As with most marriages, it's the same argument over and over, just in different keys. Eventually, we found some patterns that worked. Apparently, puppies need a lot of time in their crates. Slowly, we found our way to an equilibrium, like we always have. Neither of us comes from ideal, stable families. We didn't know what a healthy marriage looked like. When we met at 19, we had very different ideas of what marriage was, when was an ideal time to marry, and what we thought our lives would look like in 20 years. By the time we were 20, we couldn't imagine life without each other. By 21, we were married. And we were making it all up as we went along. There were no married couples in our lives to ask us probing questions or for us to pattern our lives after. There were certainly no interracial couples who could help us sort out our racial journeys and histories, or how they were shaping our newly formed family. And in our evangelical and Pentecostal churches, there was no pattern for 2 people with gifts and callings where the woman didn't have to put her calling aside for the sake of the family. So we started with some simple questions. What were things from our childhood that we most wanted to avoid? Where were the patterns of violence or distrust that we wanted to end with us? In this time, we also arrived at our golden rule. We don't do anything big until we both feel total peace in the decision. More about that in Chapter 6. But everything else was trial and error, trust and commitment to being for the other, and more trial and more error. We had to navigate difficult questions of race in the Korean community. We had to mine the formations of masculinity. We had to figure out questions of life together as settled answers got tossed around with each new child or new city or new vocational opportunity or shift. And here we are, 20-plus years later, still learning, still growing. While we share a lot of our own story here, this book also reflects our experience of mentoring many couples over the years whose stories are similar to ours. Many of these couples were looking for a different model of marriage than one in which the man intentionally or unintentionally leads the family. Others were interracial, while still others had less than ideal family histories. We've wanted to offer not the way marriages or relationships ought to be. Rather, we've offered a way that opens up possibilities for both people to discover what flourishing might look like for them and what flourishing life together might offer to the world. We say a way because we are sure we have made mistakes. We have done the best we could with what we had. But the possibilities we imagined and the options we refused also grew out of our unique stories. As an interracial couple, we are aware that our life can't always be reproduced in our mentees, students, or children. Traditions and legacies are gifts that are offered so that our children might create their own traditions. We only hope they see the people and the histories that shaped us and how those stories continue to live in them. Similarly, couples we walk with carry their own histories, scars, joys, and ways of navigating the world. A marriage is not a sourdough recipe that can be perfected with just enough time. Part of our joy is watching our mentees, students, and children create new ways of living, loving, and creating community in their midst, in ways we could not have imagined. We offer our story and hope you can find something of yourself in it. And whether there are places of resonance or difference, we hope this book sparks a conversation about who you are, who the person you're with is, in what you are creating together. Whether you are an interracial couple or a couple with shared racial and ethnic stories, or a couple within the LGBTQ+ community, your story is not ours, and our story is not the totality of all marriages or relationships. Rather, we hope this book can be an invitation to discover your own story. We are also aware that a book on marriage and relationships can be difficult in the midst of relationships that are struggling through pain. Too many marriages are spaces of violence, manipulation, and abuse. As you listen to these pages, hear us in saying that the calls to covenant and to commitment are calls that assume reciprocity and love as the basic shape of marital life. Violence, abuse, and manipulation are acts of dehumanization and violations of covenantal commitments. And God wants more than that for all of us. We also want to offer a quick note on sex. If you bought this book and began eagerly looking for the chapter on sexual intimacy, you may be disappointed. It may seem unusual to have a book on marriage and relationships and not talk about sex. But marriage is more than who you have sex with. We also recognize that how couples think about sex and sexual intimacy is unique to each couple and tied to the ways they were formed, including experiences of violence and abuse, harmful associations of sex with shame, and the many varied ways couples can enjoy each other. While we both believe that the greatest intimacy and power of sex comes in monogamous, covenanted relationships, we also know that just because sex happens in those relationships doesn't mean that the act is holy or beautiful or mutual. We also acknowledge that people have sex outside the confines of marriage. When it comes down to it, vows and a ceremony are not what make the act holy or unholy. Sex is a beautiful aspect of being human and an expression of what it means to enjoy and be enjoyed. One way of seeing and feeling what it means to experience joy and ecstasy. In a real way, sex is an aspect of the relating that we'll describe throughout this book. Sex is an act of mutual listening, a desire for the other to experience bliss and joy and trust that your partner wants the same for you. Sex in a covenanted relationship is discovering the depths of this one person and sometimes going through seasons that seem slow, dry, or mundane, but never resting in those deserts. It is the discovery of new ways of enjoying and the recognition of how new seasons of life invigorate the intimacy of sharing your body with the other. Whether this looks like sex all the time in all kinds of places, or sex in regular scheduled intervals, or sex on seemingly rare occasions, it is never simply release or consumption. Rather, it is an act that lives and expresses your journey together. And that requires discovery of yourself, learning the other, a willingness to grow and adapt, trust in the other, and patience. We hope that not only couples will listen to this book, but but also anyone who is hoping for a sojourner in navigating the world shaped by ideas of race and gender and sexuality that have boxed us in and seemed to determine who to be with and how to be with them in this world. Marriage is not an institution separate from race and gender. When people get married, questions of masculinity and femininity and of race and racism don't vanish. Marriage has historically been a way for ideas about gender and race to be turned into mechanisms of control and exclusion. There is a reason marriage was forbidden for slaves, that interracial marriage was illegal until 1967, and that same-sex marriage was illegal in many states until 2015. Marriage has been an arena in which some of the most violent and pernicious legacies of racism and sexism persist and are reproduced. But when we begin to see marriage not as the pinnacle of what it means to be made in the image of God, but just as one good relationship of many, we can also begin to see how marriage is connected to dynamics of friendship, sex, gender, race, mundane everydayness, and life-changing transformations. In marriage, all of these dynamics coalesce into a difficult and beautiful creation, a new culture forged in the life of two people joined together. That new creation reverberates beyond those two people, whether it's in their vocation, in the people they mentor or serve, in what they create or build, or in the children they raise. We've seen the harm wrought by rigid ideas of marriage. We've also seen the ways that this life together can be a space of fullness and purpose and joy. But it might not be everything we dreamed it would be. Hashtag relationship goals. Hashtag power couple. It might require spaces of uncertainty, of patience, of one person going slow so the other can go fast, and trusting it won't always be that way. It will be seasons of uncertainty, where our mana is the other person's winds while we plod along. But part of what makes life together powerful is that it never requires one person alone to sacrifice, to slow down, to wither. If a couple is to flourish, both people need opportunities to live into their gifts. And in the end, it might be discovering that flourishing is something quite different from what we had imagined at the beginning. To live into this, we have had to ask questions about how our bodies do work in the world. We've had to become students of one another, even when it feels like the tests keep changing. We've had to take steps back and ask what hasn't been working, and trust that the other person wants to find out too. The story keeps unfolding. This is our story. The story of a Korean-American woman and a Black mixed man trying to discover what it means to make a life together. To become we.
1. The plan. People change. Maybe you should give this some time to figure out who you are before you get married, she said. We had flown to California for me to introduce Brian to a few of my aunts and extended family. Sitting in the dining room with them, Brian and I tried to listen as best we could. They clearly loved us and wanted the best for us. Brian and I were in love, and after 10 months of dating and thousands of dollars spent on phone calls, stamps, and plane and bus tickets, we knew we wanted to spend the rest of our lives together. We were also 20 years old, and a young 20 at that. My aunts knew that we would change over time, and they were worried for us. We replied, "Yes, we are going to change, but we are going to grow toward each other." We were so smart. Of course we were going to change, we thought to ourselves. We even knew how we were going to change. We had a plan for our lives, a calling even. Now, with our own children nearly grown, we see what they saw. We had no idea what was in store for us or who we were. But part of what changed us wasn't just graduating from college or the first job or clarifying vocational goals. Our life together was a journey of discovering the questions we didn't realize we were asking, the histories and the stories that kept pulling and tugging and shaping us under the surface of our lives. While we weren't wrong to believe we'd grow toward one another, there was a fundamental misconception. We thought we knew who we were to begin with. In our young minds and hearts, we looked at one another and thought growing toward one another was simply a matter of loving the other person. But we didn't understand that we were trees that had been planted in very different orchards and nurtured in different soils. Just as a tree has little understanding of itself as it grows, we had so much to learn about ourselves and our own stories, even while we were trying to grow toward this new person in our lives. Self-discovery is an ongoing process because we are never finished becoming. As each year passes, as we enter into periods of lack or plenty, hardship or joy, and loss or abundance, the light of who we are refracts a little differently in new moments. The growth we experienced in ourselves and toward one another was sometimes a series of conscious decisions and explicit conversations. At other times, the growth was stopping and breathing for a moment, taking stock of what was underneath the frustration or the boredom or the work of just getting through each day, to ask ourselves who we were and who we were becoming for ourselves and for the other person in that moment. As we begin to think about relationships, even before we can begin to talk about what it means to join our lives together, we need to first ask who we think we are. There are plenty of personality types and gift assessments and premarital workshops on family systems, but part of the question of knowing ourselves is beginning to recognize that we cannot know the totality of who we are in that moment or who we are going to be. And yet, in the midst of this unknowing, there are tributaries and rivers and lakes of history, dynamics of power and oppression, formations of masculinity and femininity, structures of race and ethnic identity, all working in the midst of the stream that is our life. The work of charting the rivers of history that live in us and have shaped us never ends. Learners of a way, be it an instrument or a life of faith or an art, are always learning and discovering something new about themselves and how they've changed over the years. This is no less true of ourselves as individuals. But when we bind our lives to another and live in daily intimacy and closeness, these transformations are even more pronounced. When two people choose to become a we, they begin to discover more of who each person is. In our own experience and in counseling couples navigating relationships, preparing for marriage, or working through years of marriage, we have seen how the illusion of certainty and assumptions become this extra baggage that fills the rooms of their lives until they have no room to move or to even see the other person. But the biggest assumptions that rarely emerge in these conversations are the ones people make about themselves. Usually, people think they know themselves. That's why they can be so sure they are right and the other person is wrong. Not only do they know themselves, but they also know their own history, the way they are navigating their community, and the questions or discomfort of being different. This certainty might be about issues of character or personality traits. But maybe they haven't asked how, as a Black man, for example, they have navigated predominantly white spaces and how that experience has shaped or is shaping them. Maybe as a man, they haven't asked how dynamics of gender are moving under the surface of the frustrations at home and the ease they feel at work. Even while we are discovering who we are also navigating a world shaped by race, gender, and sexuality. And none of these are realities that we fully understand in ourselves at any given time. We want to begin this book by reflecting on personhood. We are being intentional in avoiding the word individual, because no one exists apart from communities and families and stories. A person is always a patchwork. But a person is also a point.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?